You're welcome in, everybody, to another episode of 410 Sports Talk. I am James Haskell, along with my co-host Glenn Martin, and our faithful producer in the background, DK, as always. So grateful to be here tonight. Looking forward to this conversation. We're going to get into the Baltimore Ravens' new system, who will benefit and lose from a production standpoint the most with Todd Monken in town. But before we do, take a second, hit the subscribe button, turn your notifications, turn on the so you, little bell notifications, all the cool stuff. All the bells and whistles, pun intended. And of course, give us a like if you're enjoying the content. But Glenn, let's talk about this here. We know now that the Baltimore Ravens offense is going to turn over completely on its head, right? The Ravens have not been hiding it. Monken is he builds his offense around his players, but if you look at his offenses, it is almost the exact opposite of Greg Roman, right? And so we are now going from a Greg Roman-led offense to a Todd Monken-led offense. And with that being said, there are going to be players' production that goes both up and down. And so that's really what we're going to talk about, who we think the big standouts are going to be. And then we think the guys are going to struggle the most are going to be. So where do you want to start? You want to start with the positive and start with the negative? And end
well, let's bounce
positive?
Back and forth. Let's go back.
I like that. All right.
Yeah,
good idea.
Yeah. We'll start. So let's start with the positive side, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I think that's a good way to do it. All right, I think the biggest potential benefit or beneficiary of the change in offense is J.K. Dobbins. And some people may say, man, that's kind of odd. You're going from a running offense, the most historic running offense in the NFL has ever seen, to an offense that's not going to. You know, how could it possibly a running back benefit? Well, if you look back, we don't have a big sample size from an NFL standpoint of Todd Monken as an offensive coordinator. But if you just look at what he did in his one season in 2019 with the Cleveland Browns, Nick Chubb had almost 1,500 yards rushing, 5 yards a carry, which to this point, J.K. Dobbins has done that and then some. So no reason to think he can't have similar productivity.
Even if you know, maybe the passing yards are more predominant for J.K., but overall production, absolutely. I mean, I agree with you 1,000%.
And then on top of, not only did he get a plenty of a workload getting 1,500 yards is you know running standpoint, but also Nick Chubb. Now, you know, this is a team where he had Kareem Hunt with him. Nick Chubb had 49 targets as a pass catcher, which led to 36 receptions for nearly 300 yards. I look at J.K. Dobbins is a better pass catcher. You know, I look at him as a guy who I think has, you know, more of an opportunity to take those 36 catches and turn to more than, you know, 280 yards. I think he can do much more than that. So I think J.K. Dobbins is one guy that, despite the fact that he looks to be unhappy right now, at least with his current contract situation, he should be jumping for joy, because oftentimes we also remember that he was frustrated with his lack of usage, specifically in the red zone, where he felt like he could have punched it in and just wasn't given the opportunity. Well, Nick Chubb, I mean, he certainly got his opportunities. I mean, you talk about 298 carries versus 43 from the backup. That's a pretty big difference. So it shows a guy who'd be willing to ride the hot hand. If you're running well, if you're strong, we'll stick with it. So yeah, that's my first guy I think is going to benefit in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with you there. I mean, I can see his overall production. Wasn't there 1 year, I want to say 2 years ago, when our leading receiver as a back was Gus with like 9 receptions or something?
Dude, it's terrible. I mean, just so this year, our leading target getter was Kenyon Drake with 26.
Yeah, so I mean,
Justice Hill, 12. J.K. got 8 pass targets.
Right, so I think just that alone is just like you said, a huge step in his production. Nonetheless, he's going to be a year off that injury, so that's going to be exciting. But I'm going to give you another guy who I think has even more to gain, and I'm going to kind of preface my comments here. I think any wide receiver, like we kind of talked about before the show started, going from a Greg Roman-led offense to Todd Monken-led offense stands to gain. But I think that our number one wide receiver, as long as he can stay healthy, will be Rashad Bateman. So I think of all the receivers, if anybody has the most to gain there, I think it's Rashad. Not only is it that he's, I think, going to be a number one wide receiver in, you know, at least the early part of the season, but there's going to be a lot of eye candy around him that's going to keep the defense preoccupied. We just talked about JK catching passes. Obviously, Lamar can take off at any time. You got Mark Andrews. You got Odell Beckham, who can be the ultimate decoy, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got Zay Flowers buzzing around all over the place, right, who's dangerous anytime he gets the ball in his hands. So that leaves you with a guy like Rashad, who I think in a lot of scenarios is going to be in favorable matchups. Anytime we've seen him healthy and in favorable matchups, Rashad Bateman has looked like the player we drafted him to be. So I think that he has a chance to take a huge step this year and has a lot to gain from this offense shifting towards a more pass-friendly, pass-happy type offense. So I'm excited to see what ends up happening with Rashad as far as positive, you know, moving in the – or stand to gain, you know, positively being affected by the change in the system. Now, you got any – well, I'll let you comment on that if you want also, but I'm interested to know who your first negative one is too.
Yeah, I think the big one for me is Gus Edwards. And the reason being is because I like Gus so much. You know, I love watching him play. I think he just runs so damn hard. He's just such a – he's a guy that, you just can't take him down behind the line of scrimmage. And I think he is underrated in his pass-catching ability. However, with that being said, if you I got to imagine that Justice Hill, which you were going to talk about, I think momentarily, his role is going to expand. I think I just talked about how J.K. Dobbins, you know, if you look at Munkin's history, he'll certainly ride the hot hand. And he had – this is the only thing we look back on is when he had Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. It's not like there was Nick Chubb and then this massive gap between his backup. So even with a quality backup like we have here in Baltimore with J.K. and Gus Edwards, it was pretty clear that there was a bell cow. There was a guy who got the lion's share of the carries. This wasn't a system where – you know, they were kind of a two backs. No, it was Nick Chubb. He was getting the work. So I wonder how we're going to see that divide. I think that he's going to, unfortunately, stand to lose some carries. And then with, I think, Justice Hill's expanded role, specifically on third down as a pass catcher, limits his role there as well. So I just wonder, how's he going to get into this offense if it's a healthy year for JK and for Justice Hill? I wonder. And I think he'll do well. I just don't know how they can kind of pencil him in there.
Yeah, no, that's a tough one, because when Gus is healthy, I think he averages something like 700 yards and 5 touchdowns, right? But this has been in an offense where you can 2-3 backs can feed and, you know, can eat and average that. It just simply might not be the case in this offense. I'm hoping that that's not the case because Gus is my guy, but ultimately I hope that I can't argue with your logic. It's difficult to find myself doing so. One that I'm not too concerned about this happening because it would mean that the offense, I think, is humming. But, you know, Mark Andrews, I think, has a chance to not be as much of a focal point offensively for the Ravens this year. Two reasons. One is really not systemic being around the offense, but he's got guys on the offensive side of the ball from a pass-catching standpoint. So I think that's at least something to point out, where if you're, you know, in this type of offense and you got 4 or 5 guys out there that are, you know, 1 through 4 better than your 1 last year, right? When guys weren't healthy, and it's okay, where's 89? And then what, we'll let DeMarcus Robinson beat us. Okay. You know what I mean? Where now you got 4 first round picks out there and potentially 5 if Treadwell makes the team, right? So you got names and you got guys out there that are proven. Well, I mean, Zay's a rookie, but that are guys to be concerned about. So I could see Mark taking a drop off, and then the emergence of Kohler, the maturation of Likely. I don't think Mark cares. He has already said he doesn't care. And I don't think it will. I don't know if his overall number of touchdowns will go down, but I think his targets will go down. But I think the red zone, he'll be utilized probably just the same.
Yeah, no, I think it's not outlandish to think that Mark Andrews' target share is going to go down when it was so obvious that he was the lead dog. And now, like you said, there's so many other mouths to feed that he could still have a good season and still see less targets and slightly less production. So, I think that's a high likelihood. Now, I think both tight ends are both going to benefit both behind Mark Andrews, but I'll talk more about Charlie Kohler, because Isaiah Likely did get 60 targets last year. So he, he got, you know, and part of that was because when Mark Andrews was out, they just force fed him. They put him in the Mark Andrews role and he became, you know, the number one guy. But I think Charlie Kohler is going to be a guy. I mean, he only had 6 targets. He didn't play much last year as he came back from the injury. But everything they're saying coming out of camp is that this guy's looked phenomenal. He knows how to use his body in the red zone. This is a guy who can pick up big time first downs if need be. So I think what we saw from Monken in college was a guy who will say, who can make plays? If you can make plays, it really doesn't matter which position you're in or you play, you're going to get the ball. So I think he's like Charlie Kohler. I wonder what he would have done if this was still Greg Roman. Like, how does he impact the field? Because you're not going to unseat Mark Andrews. I don't think you'll do that with Isaiah Likely, at least not yet, because we've seen more from him. Mm-hmm. So how would he have gotten on the field? I think this is the only way he gets on the field is a guy like Todd Monken who can say, look, this guy can make plays. That's how he's getting on the field.
Yeah.
And you can put him in the slot. You can put him in certainly in red zone scenarios. I think all the tight ends will be used. I love when I hear that balance to him is everyone can hurt you and everyone's going to get a chance. And I think he's going to be a big, big-time recipient. Because if not, what would Charlie Kohler's role be if Greg Roman was still here?
Yeah, I mean, holding the clipboard, right? Giving guys water. And
unless there's an injury.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. So what you're saying is that Kohler's a positively impacted, and you think by nature of just the balance and the depth in the tight end room, that 60 targets might be a bit for Isaiah Likely. Because you already got the all-pro, and then you got Kohler who's emerging.
So yeah, not to say he can't be I think he could be maybe even more impactful with a little bit less targets because we didn't see in the early season, we saw him miss a couple of those 60 That's targets. True. But I think he'll get an opportunity to get the ball in space, and I think he'll have more yak yards. So even though his targets might go down, his yardage could go up.
Yeah, no, that's a good point as well. The other one that I want to talk about from a guy who could gain, I'm going to go to another receiver, but so I'm kind of cheating here. But I'm interested to see what Duvernay is in this offense. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of people that are camp Duvernay that are, you know, that have been buying him since day one. And, you know, I picked up Duvernay in fantasy last year and early on I looked great.
You look like a genius.
Yeah. And then after that, I kept holding on to hope for too long and it just did not go well for me. So, so my point is that there's got to be people that have seen that and that are excited about that and expect to see an enhanced role him for himself. Naturally, he's got to think that number 4 spot's mine. Like that's me. I should be the number 3 guy. Zay's a rookie. Like this is my job. You know what I'm saying? So that'll be interesting as well. But you know, I got to ask you, Glenn, because there's one you talked about off air from a negative standpoint that I think is interesting that a lot of people won't readily consider. Why don't you talk to me about that a little bit?
Yeah, and look, people could end up saying in hindsight that I was crazy for saying this, but when I look at a guy like Ronnie Stanley, I look at him before Lamar Jackson and Greg Roman took over ownership of this offense. I don't think many people would have said he was a top 10 tackle. You know, when Joe Flacco was in it at quarterback, you know, Ronnie Stanley sure battled injuries, but even when he was healthy, they might put him at 12 in tackles. And then all of a sudden, Lamar Jackson, of course, he helps all of his offensive linemen, and Ronnie Stanley is included in that, but also Greg Roman. All of a sudden, they get here in 2019, and Ronnie Stanley not only vaults himself into the top 10, but he has maybe the greatest left tackle season in history of football, a better statistical season than Jonathan Ogden had. And I don't think anyone in the world would take Ronnie Stanley over Jonathan Ogden. But that season was better than any we've ever seen from J.O. So I think even if Ronnie plays well in this system, it's not like crazy to think that is he going to be the all pro left tackle? Like, I think we could see just regression from the standpoint of he seemed to fit that offense like no other. When you turn in the single greatest season in history at the position, at least it seemed like, I think that he could, you know, maybe go back to that. I still think a top 10. I think top 10 tackle is pretty easy for him, but maybe a 5-10 rather than the best left tackle in the game when that offense was hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one, but I certainly, once again, I can follow your logic here. The only thing that I would say to that is I think that Ronnie is a natural, like when I think of a left tackle that would benefit from a pass happy, from a pass happy offense, I think of an ultra athletic, a guy with range. I don't think of a big bruising guy. I think of a guy built like Ronnie, right? Now, like you said, the tape is the tape. But I think the other thing that really has helped Ronnie outside of the Greg Roman system is just the emergence of Lamar Jackson and his mobility, you know, helping Ronnie from a statistical standpoint, right? Even if he gives up a pressure, Lamar's probably going to shake the shoes off the guy in front of him and he's not going to get sacked or whatever the case may be. So I think that that has something to do with it. But I can't disagree with you that it is something to think about. And it's an interesting one because also when you're running the ball, like you're all right. You have the advantage because you're moving forward.
He's a monster run with his athleticism. He's a monster run blocker.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see, but that's an interesting one that I did not think about at all.
Think about the deception. Remember when people didn't know where the hell the ball was?
Yeah.
They're on defense. They don't know where the ball is. Think of what that level of deception does as far as helping your offensive line gain an advantage in that initial, you know, as the ball is snapped. I'm just saying, let's not, you know, that – Ronnie was not inside the top 10 in tackles before that offense came here. And Lamar came here as well. I'll give you that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I tell you what, there's going to be a lot of influx up and down for guys. We didn't bring up Pat Ricard, I don't think.
Well, Pat Ricard, that's like obvious, right?
A given, like, yeah.
He's going to suffer in a big way. But it looks like he's going to transition into being like your blocking tight end, which every team needs. In fact, Mercedes Lewis, I think, is about to be signed at 40 to the Jets to be a blocking tight end. So there's definitely a market, but also we didn't talk on the other end much about Justice Hill. I think it gets an obvious bump.
Yeah.
But how much, if those guys in front of him are healthy, that kind of remains to be seen.
Yeah. And all this will be figured out. I'm like, as the season goes on, but even before that, through camp, through pregame or preseason games and things like that. So it's an exciting time. Let us know what your guys' thoughts are. If we left someone out, leave us your comments.
Who's going to tweet displeasure in week 8? Who's going to be pissed in week 13 when the team hits three-game losing streak?
So Glenn likes to say this. When he loses, he's a salty baby.
Yep.
Who's going to be the salty baby? All right?
Who's
going to be the, what was it, Marquise Brown, why you got soldiers or something, something soldiers?
Yeah, why you got soldiers if you're not letting them.
Not using them or something. Yeah, who's going to be that guy? That's a good question. Leave all your comments below and we'll talk to you guys soon.